KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Oregon Tradeswoman presentation, My Walk Has Never Been Average, on Friday, September 26th at 7 p.m. My Walk Has Never Been Average is a multimedia presentation based on the lives of women whose stories are rarely told. Adapted for the stage from interviews with Black women in all aspects of construction, these stories reveal great inner strength and accomplishment. That's My Walk Has Never Been Average on Friday, September 26th, 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland, Oregon. For more information, that can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's 9:01, and here's what's coming up on the on KBOO this morning. First, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with journalist Robert Perry about Ukraine. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, a report on the cross-country train headed for the Global People's Climate Rally in New York this weekend. Activist Harvey Wasserman on the next step in climate change action. Also an interview with a psychotherapist and Lyme disease activist on dealing with the illness. At 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, we hear an interview with Tasmanian writer Richard Flanagan about his latest novel, The Narrow Road to the Deep North, which takes place in 1943 in a Japanese POW camp on the Thai-Burma Death Railway. And at 11:30, special host Jean Bradley speaks with Doris Kearns Goodwin about her book, The Bully Pulpit, and how President Teddy Roosevelt effectively used that device, that bully pulpit. And thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. You're not a KBOO member. Don't tell us. You need to become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking where it says Donate Today. Thanks for doing that. We're going to go right to Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. And a happy birthday to Will. It's 9:03, almost 9:04 in the morning in Cascadia. This is an invitation to change everything. That's how the print appears in the call for everyone to show up at Waterfront Park on September 21st at 3 p.m. here in Portland. It is about climate change. And 350.org writes, "To change everything, we need everybody. A better world is within our reach." Pardon me. "A world with an economy that works for people and the planet. A world safe from the ravages of climate change. A world with good jobs, clean air and water, and healthy communities. Join us for the largest climate justice mobilization in history as people take it to the streets across the country and the world on September 21st, including here in Oregon. With our future on the line and the whole world watching, we'll take a stand to bend the arc of history. Time is now. Scientists say that action to save our planet in the next year and a half is critical to our survival. This September, world leaders are gathering in New York City for a UN summit on climate change. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is urging governments to support an ambitious global agreement to dramatically reduce global warming pollution. Across the country, from New York to Portland, the People's Climate March will show, and that's Portland, Oregon, right here. The People's Climate March will show that we stand together, demanding a better world for ourselves and for generations to come. This calls for unprecedented collaboration. That's where you come in. Join us in solidarity for the People's Climate March in Portland. That's at 3 p.m. Tom McCall Waterfront Park. And that's Saturday, the 21st, this Saturday. More information on that just days away from what's been billed as the largest climate mobilization in world history. Organizers behind the People's Climate March and mobilization are putting the final details in place while asking people across the planet the simple question, are you in? On Sunday, September 21st, just 2 days before United Nations Climate Summit, a mass march is being planned for New York City that is expected to attract tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of people. And you heard earlier that there is a train involved, and you can get more details on that by listening on KBOO Portland. And I've just been corrected. The march is Sunday, excuse me. Sunday, September 21st. And thanks very much to Alert Engineer for that. On the same day, for people not in proximity to Manhattan, a global mobilization will see coordinated actions in thousands of locations across the globe where people and communities will voice their call for immediate and aggressive action to tackle the threat of a warming planet and destruction stemming from humanity's fossil fuel addiction. And I just want to say about that a couple of things. One, this is likely to be the biggest thing since Occupy, and I think you're going to want to be in. And sorry about that. Clear that Saturday right out of your head. It's Sunday. And, well, and the other thing to say is too much to say all at once, I guess. So if you care about the climate, this is where, this is the march that you'll want to. Well, I also want to say that Naomi Klein, who is very much behind the march, and who has issued an open invitation, will be here on the KBOO air on Wednesday, the 1st of October, when we will be starting our membership drive. And I think you'll want to hear it, and I'll be interviewing her again. I was honored to be able to interview her for her book, The Shock Doctrine, years ago, and now she'll be back. And so that'll be happening Wednesday, November 1st. But the big day to remember, as I was saying, is Sunday. Naomi Klein writes, in an open invitation, to change everything, we need everyone, goes one of the slogans of the People's Climate March, and that is absolutely right. Our movements and solutions must be as varied and numerous as the depth and scope that this crisis demands. We need everyone in the climate fight. The labor movement, healthcare workers, teachers, farmers, everyone defending the public sector and community values and solidarity where they live. We're not there yet, but powerful glimpses of the kind of deep and diverse movement we need are starting to appear. And this is why this march is about. That's what this march is about, she writes, for me. It is an expression of how profoundly the climate movement has changed since the days of elite summit hopping and inside game of beltway cap and trade fights. Indeed, the People's March is the physical convergence of many new and resurgent climate movements united in their firm belief that the time to confront the climate criminals, say that three times quickly, confront the climate criminals, is now. So as long as I'm talking about marches, there's a march tomorrow, September 19th. At 5 p.m. And that is the Portland Peaceful Response Coalition, and that's about the whole ISIS nonsense. And quoting Portland Peaceful Response Coalition, as the U.S. ramps up its airstrikes in Iraq and threatens to expand the new war on ISIS into Syria, local Portland peace groups will hold an expanded Friday rally for peace on September 19th at 5 p.m. titled No More U.S. War Out of Iraq, Stay Out of Syria. The event builds on the weekly Friday rally for peace and justice held at the southwest corner of Pioneer Courthouse Square at Southwest Yamhill and Broadway. The 5 p.m. event is co-sponsored by Peace and Justice Works Iraq Affinity Group. It expands the weekly PPRC Friday rally, which has been going on since 2001. A march will commence at about 5:20 p.m. In addition to the updates on the situation in Iraq and Syria, the event will include promotion for a forum coming up on Tuesday, September 23rd, coordinated by the Peace and Justice Works Iraq Affinity Group, titled U.S. Foreign Policy, The Wars Continue. So if you want more information on that, call 503-236-3065, 503-236-3065. This is Press Watch. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. It's 9:09 on the Pacific coast of North America, and Matt Siegel has written in Reuters, the intelligence showed that militants connected with the Islamic State were planning to behead a member of the public in Australia. Prime Minister Tony Abbott said on Thursday after hundreds of police raided homes in a sweeping counterterrorism operation. Now I want to tell you what that's really about, because that sentence that I just read is how it's going to be presented to you. But if you look at it more carefully, what really happened in Sydney is that 800 police were mobilized in a massive and splashy raid. Helicopters were thundering over the town. And, if you look at the infrared footage from the helicopter that's been released, you can see them moving rather leisurely because this is a false flag operation. And returning to the text, Abbott said there was a serious risk from a terrorist attack days after Australia raised its national terror threat level to high for the first time. The heightened alert citing the likelihood of attacks by Australians radicalized in Iraq or Syria. And departing once again, what this is really about is they're saying that there's an email that said, go behead somebody in public. And oh my gosh, there's an email. And the end result of all this running around with 800 police and helicopters and the whole thing makes me want to play Alice's Restaurant. It's not that time of year quite yet. pardon me. The end result is they seem to be charging one person. Omar John Azari, 22 years old, had appeared in court after the raids and been charged with conspiracy to commit a terrorist act and would remain in custody until a hearing in November. So it takes 800 cops to get him, and there's 15 others that they have arrested but apparently aren't charging over an alleged email, which, as you know perfectly well, could well have been sent by someone in the pay of the government. So huge false flag. I and others have been saying, oh, look, there's a big war or wars afoot, and the American public isn't frothing at the mouth yet. It must be time for a false flag. Well, there's one in Australia, and who knows what's going to come down here. You may have heard the right-wing meme that 11 planes are missing, which is just nonsense if you look at it. They're counting the two, or they're counting one of the MH370 that hasn't been found, which is a weird thing, okay, but they're also counting aircraft at the Libyan airport in Tripoli, and if you look at the pictures, just look at the pictures. I could leave it at that. Okay, I'll tell you what the pictures are like. These aircraft have been shot to rags and aren't going anywhere. And you're supposed to believe that they're suddenly going to come crashing into, I guess, skyscrapers in the U.S., which will then magically turn to powder. In Counterpunch, Norman Pollack writes, ISIS, WND of our time. ISIS, weapons of mass destruction of our time. To light a fire, White House gathering within itself the military and intelligence community sends out General Dempsey and Secretary Hagel to testify that before the Senate Armed Services, feeler about war, while Obama mouths peace, the old trick, a trial balloon, while the President of the United States sits pretty and has deniability. Pardon me. That's a terrorist phlegm that's attacking my my larynx there. The important thing, build war sentiment. Feed the public a steady diet of war propaganda. It is working. A war-weary public, as is often contended, Nonsense. America hungers for war, needs war to feel muscular. Shock and awe. Air campaigns, whomever directed against, testifies to U.S. greatness. War is thought essential to a prosperous economy. Peace, ever since Theodore Roosevelt, is thought ignoble. Perhaps also tilting capitalism towards stagnation. Why deny American superiority? Obama rides the crest of the ethnocentric and xenophobic wave, ideological cross-currents that spell exceptionalism. Bingo. The corporate state subsumes its militarization. Obama has transformed himself from POTUS to Commander-in-Chief. Vaccination, the Hamlet-like facade, is for the purpose of concealing a seething underneath. The White House thinks ahead. It is more ambitious in its war planning than previous administrations. Obama surrounds himself with the best would-be Clausewitzes. With a geopolitical vision of U.S. unilateral control over the global system. Everything is possible through air power. Before, he leaned on special ops and the CIA, drone assassination his method of choice. Now his general staff is getting itchy, eager to display their wares, show their stuff. And departing from what is written there in Counterpunch, as I was saying, written by Norman Pollack, there really is just an astonishing amount of equipment in the region and personnel. And you may remember from hearing piecemeal that, you know, there's 1,000 troops in Jordan and that there's, I guess around 1,000 troops on those marine carriers. You're not supposed to know what marine carriers are. You're supposed to be laughed at if you say marine carriers. They're marine carriers, okay, the helicopter carriers that ferry Marines about. There is all kinds of boots on the ground, and there's boots on the boat, and we're being set up for this huge war. And as I was saying earlier, there is a protest tomorrow here in Portland, 5 p.m. Pioneer Square, about this. And reading a little further ahead, just skipping ahead on that article, he writes, look also for stability, i.e. counter-revolution in advance of anything happening. A world without socialism, equally one without obstacles to American commercial financial penetration. Ditto opposition forces and or politics questioning U.S. moral leadership. Bring Kipling up to date. The world never sits on American military bases. That already accomplished, it will be necessary to supplement with more, always more, as the U.S. controls Titan, the propaganda of domination begins to wear thin, and the natives, including formerly top-ranked states, become restive. So Dempsey and Hagel on the Hill, spreading the message of war, covering the bleep of Obama so as to make him look reluctant and forced into a decision he had already made. This is a delicate maneuver. It must not look like insubordination. There's more on that article at counterpunch.org. Time is 9:16. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Number to call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Interested to hear from you what you think about marching against corporate-induced climate change, marching against the corporate-supported mass world wars. Interested to know what you think about Russia flying Tupolev 94 bombers off the coast with cruise missiles attached, cruise missiles for nuclear weapons. Now I want to change the topic a bit and talk about Ebola. Is Ebola a depopulation agenda? I have to ask that because of the context. Is Liberia getting Katrina'd? Not so benign neglect. After all, the U.S. was attacked in 2001 with anthrax, and the subsequent investigation blaming Hatfield was obviously a cover-up. So what I'm saying here is there's a reason to ask, when you see the sudden appearance of a virus, well, did Fort Detrick have anything to do with it? I commend your attention to an article from 2002 in the Hartford Courant. Here's a blast from the past. This is written by Jack Dolan and Dave Altamari. Lab specimens of anthrax spores, Ebola virus, and other pathogens disappeared from the Army's Biological Warfare Research Facility in the early 1990s. During a turbulent period of labor complaints and recriminations among rival scientists there, documents from the Internal Army Inquiry show. The 1992 inquiry also found evidence that someone was secretly entering a lab late at night to conduct unauthorized research, apparently involving anthrax. A numerical counter on a piece of lab equipment had been rolled back to hide work done by the mystery researcher who left the misspelled label Antrax in the machine's electronic memory, according to the documents obtained by the Courant. Experts disagree on whether the lost specimens pose a danger. An Army spokesperson said they do not because they would have effectively been killed by chemicals in preparation for microscopic study. A prominent molecular biologist said, however, that resilient anthrax spores could possibly be retrieved from a treated specimen. In addition, a scientist who once worked at the Army facility said that because of poor inventory controls, it is possible that some of the specimens disappeared while still viable before being treated. Now, departing from that, speaking for myself and from memory of books such as The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence by John D. Marks and Victor Marchetti, from books like The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, difficult to find books, I would say that the fact that there were poor inventory controls had everything to do with handy access for the secret biological warfare programs, even more secrets, even more secret than the sort of open secret of Fort Detrick. Returning to the text, not in dispute is what the incidents say about the disorganization, lack of security in some quarters of the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, known as U.S. OMRID, at Fort Detrick, Maryland in the 1990s. Fort Detrick is believed to be the original source of the Ames strain of anthrax used in the male attacks. And investigators have questioned people there and at a handful of other government labs and contractors. Meanwhile, one of the 27 sets of specimens has been found and is still in the lab. An Army spokesperson said it may have been in use when the inventory was taken. The fate of the rest, some including samples no larger than a pencil point, remains unclear. In addition to anthrax and Ebola, the specimens included hantavirus, simian AIDS virus, and two that were labeled unknown, an Army euphemism for classified research whose subject was secret. So keep that in mind through the following. One of the missionary doctors who survived Ebola after treatment in the U.S. spoke before Congress this week, saying many, including one of the senators today, used the analogy of a fire burning out of control to describe this unprecedented Ebola outbreak. He said, "Indeed, it is a fire. It is a fire straight from the pit of hell. We cannot fool ourselves into thinking that the vast moat of the Atlantic Ocean will protect us from the flames of this fire. Instead, we must move quickly and immediately to deliver the promises that have been made and to be open to practical, innovative interventions. This is the only way to keep entire nations from being reduced to ashes," end quote. That is the doctor who survived it. His name is Brantley. And got another correction. Apparently, my mind is wandering further than I knew, and a caller has said that I said November 1st for the beginning of the pledge drive, the membership drive. It's October 1st, and Naomi Klein will be here October 1st. And thanks once again for the correction. Makes me wonder. But makes me wonder about my own braincito. But hopefully, you know, hopefully I can keep soldiering on. Now, there is an article on, let's see, it's on Science. Well, I mislabeled it. Okay, science.org, I think it is. By John Cohen and Sally Cervic. As President Barack Obama explained in remarks he made yesterday at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, the world is looking to the United States for help. "It's a responsibility we embrace," Obama said. "We're prepared to take leadership on this to provide the kinds of capabilities that only America has and mobilize the world in ways that only America can do. That's what we're doing as we speak," end quote. So this causes me to comment, of course, that why is this only happening now? I won't say it's too little. We're talking about 3,000 troops. I don't know. Maybe that's not too little. It's a military operation that's being proposed by Obama, finally, in response to the desperate pleas from African leaders and from the World Health Organization and from the Médecins Sans Frontières, who have all called for months now for a much, much larger response, who have been absolutely desperate as this situation becomes more and more serious. Well, finally, there's a response. And that's why I'm asking. And in context of the information I gave you about Fort Detrick, is this intentional neglect? Is Africa being Katrina'd? Number to call, 503-231-8187. And I'll go to the caller that is waiting on the line. Hi.
Hi, this is Thomas.
Hi, Thomas.
Hey, just a few comments about the latest adventure chapter of the U.S. adventure in the Middle East here in the form of combating these evil, terrible people, ISIS, who behead people. Never mind the fact our closest ally, Saudi Arabia, recently beheaded something like over 130 people in public.
But just lopping them off wholesale.
Yeah, we won't talk about that. It's inconvenient. But anyway, you know, interesting to think that in the press, including the so-called quote-unquote liberal press in the United States, I haven't heard any comments about the fact that, you know, Congress has shown its bipartisan fealty for this adventure and just voting to arm the quote-unquote moderate Syrian opposition against ISIS. You know, what I understand is that the myth of the Syrian, that there is no moderate Syrian opposition.
No, they just conducted a peace treaty, basically, with ISIS. And
right.
You can bet that any aid that is given to them, as I was saying last week, will be given to ISIS with a Snickers bar and a handshake.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, and I guess you get a little bit of play about the fact very little about the fact that I guess the gentleman, the unfortunate U.S. gentleman who was beheaded, he was actually ISIS evidently bought him like a property off of he was already captured by some of the quote-unquote moderate opposition. So that should show you how moderate they are. But anyway, the point is that, you know, think about it. Now, we're getting kind of a twofer on this one, aren't we? Because not only do we get in more military operation in the area and drop more bombs and all that good stuff, but is it, so we're going to arm these so-called moderates in Syria. Well, now, isn't that an act of war against Syria? And aren't we now, did anybody ask for Syria about this? So I guess we're going to, play the little proxy war more again now and go for the regime change. But I guess nobody's talking about that. Amazing, isn't it?
I can't say that it's amazing. I can say it's appalling. Hey, thanks very much for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Talking about Ebola, the centerpiece of what Obama called a major increase in our response. Indeed, it really is major because the previous response is not visible. It indeed is the U.S. military, which in cooperation with the Liberian government will set up a command center in Monrovia, led by U.S. Army Major General Darrell Williams. And yeah, I'll be looking up that guy. As Obama explained, the military will set up a command and control logistics and engineering to support civilian organizations working in the region. Our armed services are better at that than any organization on earth, Obama said. Speaking of Katrina, when I was talking about the benign neglect, I wonder how well that got across. Not from me, of course, but I wonder if the story got out. I think maybe it just didn't, and that people think of the Katrina disaster as this unfortunate thing. There were two disasters. There was the hurricane, and there was the neglect, and the neglect was astonishing, especially, as I said at the time, from a nation that had a train to the great San Francisco fire and earthquake within 2 days of it occurring, and that from the East Coast from the West in 1906. From a nation that has construction battalions that famously can construct an airstrip in a day. Those construction battalions at the time were building the now completed U.S. occupation palace, laughingly known as an embassy in Iraq. There's a reason to suspect benign neglect here. And I want to be specific about that because this is a short show. My specific reason for suspecting that is the context of U.S. genocide against the native peoples, genocide against the people of Africa, and how the context is a society that is more controlled than ever by the most insanely greedy, more controlled than ever in history. We are absolutely enthralled to billionaires, and for billionaires who pride themselves in what they consider to be, you know, calculating and intelligent decisions, which are actually heinous. For the billionaires, it would be very convenient. For the population of Africa at this point in time, in which the minerals and agricultural power of Africa are just now beginning to be truly exploited, right now, if that population would just go away, that would just be so handy. Oh, and there came AIDS, and look, there's Ebola on top of AIDS. And now there's this very late response, and we find out in little bits and pieces, often contradicted, that this disease is, it is so virulent that U.S. hospital ships, which should have been the first response and should have been there months ago, will not come because they fear that once Ebola victims are on board, they will all die. They don't put it quite exactly that way, but that's their excuse. This is the same Ebola that we were told is so difficult to spread that only fools who do weird things at funerals can spread it. And the discoverer of Ebola virus said that he would be comfortable sitting next to an Ebola victim in a subway. This is an outrageous dissimulation. It would be extremely, extremely dangerous for you to be sitting next to an Ebola victim expressing the virus in its final stages in any public transportation. And real quickly, and for about 15 or 20 seconds, I'll take one more call. And I'm just informed, oh, I see, that was not a call, that was a one-minute warning. All right, then. So I just want to say once again that you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, and there are big events coming up. Sunday, there's the global mobilization. Look it up on 350.org against climate change. And Friday, there's a march at 5 p.m. at Pioneer Square against the exacerbation of the wars from the U.S. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland on 90.7 and other frequencies terrestrially and via the World Wide Web to all the ships at sea.
You're listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Fight the Empire with host Per Fagering, speaking today with journalist Robert Perry.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagering. The show is Fight the Empire, and we have a very special guest today. It's Robert Perry, who is a veteran journalist and author, and he's the publisher of Consortium News, which is a great website, good articles, and you can get some of his books through that website. And Robert Perry, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks, Per. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is a... You know, today is a big day in Scotland. They're voting on whether to separate from the United Kingdom. At the same time, the U.S. is all bent.